And we're live. Okay, there we go. Hi, everyone. It's Abdullah Samir, your friendly ex-Muslim, and we're on episode 83 of the podcast. Today, I have Noon Benson with us. Noon was on here once before along with another fellow, and the two of them were talking about Somali stuff and being part of the ex-Muslim community and being part of the Somali community and all that. But today, we have a different discussion. We're going to be talking about ex-Muslim movement. We're going to be talking so different ideas that Noon has that you want to get off his chest. How's it going, Noon?
It's going really well. Thank you so much for having me today. And, you know, today I'm actually kind of like hoping to borrow your platform in the hopes to, like, I feel like you and I know, you know, when you're a public ex-Muslim, you get DMs all the time. Shout out to everybody. Shout out to the subscribers, you know, anybody that's followed me before. You get a lot of DMs and messages from, you know, either would-be ex-Muslims or, you know, ex-Muslims that are struggling. And I feel like there's a lot of recurring themes. So honestly, my intention today is really to have a conversation, a general conversation about some of the recurring obstacles and issues that people that are either have left Islam or even have left the Islamic world and maybe a Muslim, but a bit moderate or whatever. So I feel like these, for me anyways, I would like to have this conversation really, because I don't really have many resources. I can't really help many of the ex-Muslims that come my way. So I just figure we could just have a general discussion and, you know, pick each other's brains and yeah.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds great. So yeah, we're definitely connecting now, second time from halfway across the world. So Australia, Canada, different time zones, different backgrounds. I've never been to Australia, but I heard it's quite beautiful. Maybe it's once this world lockdown, you know, ends, we can travel a bit. But for now, we're stuck.
No, we don't want you now, though. We don't want you now because you guys have COVID, new COVID. No, please stay where you are. Okay, no travel plans. Especially when I hear somebody from the UK that wants to Australia, I'm like, again? I mean, 227 years later, you want to bring us COVID-19 through? But anyways, let me not just get distracted because I have somewhere to be as well. Yeah. So look, I will try to keep this brief, straight to the point. I just wanted to today focus on three areas that I think people that either have left Islam or have left the Islamic world will struggle with. These are three. Now, this is not an exhaustive list. You can add some of your own. You can disagree, but I don't care. But anyways, this is my list based on, you know, whatever's out in the ether. So the three areas I would say, you know, we struggle in is one, the obvious, relations between opposite sexes. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Second, finance. And reliance or over-reliance on the tribe, you know, and not having, like, not being financially literate, and violence. So when you offend the tribe or others. So these are the areas I'll try to, so to talk about each one of them, I guess I will be asking of different things for each one, right? So for sex, so relations between the sexes, I do believe there has to be a lot of unlearning that has to happen, right? For finance and financial literacy, I've just got some questions for those who those would-be ex-Muslims or ex-Muslims out there or whatever. And for violence, just the conversation about what will happen, right, if you do certain things, right?
So can I just add a little bit? So
go ahead. That was just the premise. Right.
Yeah, so for the first one, relationship between the genders, I guess you're saying, like, because a lot of us come from conservative backgrounds where men are not allowed to talk to women, so they don't know how to interact with the opposite sex. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, so I would say that relations between the genders, just generally in the Islamic world, completely fraught. So, and I'll say it impacts everything, not just the relationship between, just say, a man and a woman, a sexual relationship, but I would say it impacts even how brothers relate to sisters, because we have honor culture and stuff like that, and the idea of male ownership and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, you know, it even relates to, even for example, I've had a lot of experiences with gay mm-hmm. men from the Islamic world, and the same, I experience the same type of misogyny, and also, you know, you can be spoken to in a belittling or condescending tone. And that comes from the idea, because in Islam, it teaches women have half the intellect of men. Do you get what I'm saying? So even if mm-hmm. you're a homosexual, right? I found that there's a lack of solidarity. I find that the relations between men and women are just... are very damaged, and that mm-hmm. causes flow-on issues, especially, like, this is after you've left Islam, or even after you've left the Islamic world. Shout out to some of your, by the way, were you deleting my comments last time when I was attacking some of your subscribers? I'm just saying, I can be petty like that, you know?
No, I don't.
I'm shadow banned from YouTube. I cannot comment on anything. Anywhere I comment, it gets deleted.
Yeah, definitely. I don't usually have time to go through people's comments and delete them. I know YouTube has a setting in there that it by default it hides some of the comments, so they're waiting for approval.
Oh,
there's
no,
like
straight deletes mine.
Yeah, there's probably it's probably over 10,000 comments in the moderation queue that YouTube has decided are not kosher enough to be shown. And unless I go in there and manually approve them, see, here we go. Held for review. I have, there's tons of comments in here. No, I definitely didn't delete any of your comments, especially you, okay, if you're on the show.
No, you know, I was shocked because I'm just like, why can't I defend myself? Because, you know, I'm banned from Twitter as well. Shout out. Trump. So I honestly got, to me, that's a badge of honor because, if you're like, down with the weirdos on Twitter, like, it's just anyway. I'm banned from I'm social media and me, like, I swear they're always like, no, protect the snowflakes from her.
There's a certain way you can manage that. Like, I've managed to not be banned on Twitter yet. I think once I did get a warning or something. Facebook is just like impossible to manage. I've been banned so many times. Yeah. But recently, I think Facebook's on the down now. Like, people don't really care about what I post on Facebook. So I haven't been like having any issues. YouTube as well. There is a chance of having your comments hidden, but you just have to avoid certain keywords. Just don't type certain things, or like, you know, and then you'll be fine. But then, yeah, some channels, and like I said, some channels will automatically hide a lot of the comments, and mine is one of them as well. It's just a default setting. I don't know if it's a good idea to turn that off. I was thinking about just turning it off and just allowing all the comments, but I don't know if it's a good idea. Would that like, would that be bad for the channel in any way? I don't know.
There's too many ferals in the UK, and it's cold right now. It's winter. You know, they've got COVID-19, they're locked down, and they will just, your comment section is just going to go off. You know, shout out to the girls in the UK. Don't die of COVID. Master. Yeah. but anyways, I'm Australian, you know what I mean? So Australians, we don't tend to have filters, you know what I mean? So I don't really appreciate being told that I can't say things. But then again, as I said, it's cold now and we don't want to unleash the devils from hell. So anyway, back to the matter at hand. You know, I actually was briefly, I was actually listening to a Jordan Peterson talk, and I'm not a big fan of Jordan Peterson or whatever, but he said something that really struck me for today's conversation. He said, when conversation ceases, war emerges. So I think that's really true, particularly in the example of, you know, ex-Muslims versus Muslims or whatever. You know, I know there's so many Muslims out there that are like, why do they continue to speak about this? You know what I mean? Some of your comments, that, by the way, that's what the comments that YouTube was deleting from me, from, you know, members of those who not be named. I don't like to name my critics because I feel like it gives them power. But anyway, so I feel like the second we as ex-Muslims stop talking to the Islamic world, it's not a good thing. You know, the violence will continue and it will fester. And like, we know the Ummah better than, I think, you know, we are a part of the Ummah, you know, whether we like it or not. So I think we just got to have to continually have these conversations, no matter how difficult they are, because we cannot rely on these Westerners to have the courage and have integrity to be able to uphold the things that they want in their own lives for everybody else. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. Most Westerners are pretty content. Like, you know, we have freedom of speech, we have freedom of association or whatever, and that's it. The rest of the world can go to hell. But for us, it's a much more personal issue. We can't just, you know, we have a saying in my culture, we say you can't just cut off your leg, you know. So it's like a metaphor. You can't really cut off, you know, your family and your, you know, people that, yeah, that raised you and so on. So that's why we as ex-Muslims must be diligent. Like, I think we should have these conversations often, but we've got to also be really diligent and delicate, because not because of because I'm worried about Islamic sensibilities, but more so that it is real that, you know what, let me get into the, I'll talk about all of that in violence, otherwise I digress. But anyways, is there anything else that you want to say?
What did you mean by, yeah, we can talk about violence when we get there. That's fine. You have that topic.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to start, I'll start off with the fun stuff. So sex relations, right? I think, so I'm going to talk today from my own experience. I'm not one of these Twitter assholes, but I really should state that, you know, I'm going to speak from the dominant majority heteronormative paradigm. I think it's relative, because I can't really speak for the experiences of sexual minorities in the Islamic world, and I know it's vastly different. So I'm just going to talk about the mainstream, but I just want to acknowledge that there are other stories and narratives that do need to be shared. So this is just my experience. Okay. So first things first, being born male in the Islamic world affords one many privileges. Would you agree?
Yeah, obviously, yes, very much so, yeah.
It affords you a lot of privileges, namely the presumption of intelligence, strength, honor, and absolute ownership or guardianship of your female relations.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? So,
yeah, like more or less in different cultures, and, you know, obviously the more conservative the country, like Saudi or Qatar, UAE, Pakistan, those countries, even more so than, like, you know, if you're in a non-Muslim country like Canada or the US, then obviously women have a lot more autonomy and freedom. And, you know, some of that's protected by the law of the land. So, you know what I mean? Like, ability to divorce without having to beg for it or ask the imam to, you know, annul the marriage and all that. So, yeah, but in the Muslim world, which I've never lived other than in Egypt for 6 months, it's probably a lot worse than in you know, Western countries.
Right. And I should say that I have never lived in the Islamic world. I was born in the Islamic world. I was born and bred in Australia. And this is from my perspective of, you know, the baggage that, you know, Muslims bring from the Islamic world to the West, right? So
it, yeah,
I'm just talking generally, you know, I come from the East African community. So, you know, I come from the Ethiopian and Somali community. So they vastly, the way they practice Islam is so different. You know what I mean? I don't want to get into the individually ethnicities or individual cultures. I want to talk and address the actual verses, the actual ideas that Islam brought us all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the things that we have in common, right?
Mm-hmm.
That way, honestly, I'm kind of hoping that I'll get a lot less DMs about just the drama. But anyway, so being male, I'm just explaining this also to the Westerners as well. Yeah. So that I want them to understand, because I want them to understand the roots of honor culture. So if you're born male in the Islamic world, or just born male in an Islamic family, you're assumed to be the most intelligent. You're assumed to be the strongest. You're assumed to be the most honorable, and you're assumed to have absolute guardianship over women. I just want to say, on the flip side, in defense of men, this puts an extreme, like, this might sound like it's, you know, pretty glorious, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, everybody thinks I'm smart and strong and honorable and so on. But this puts a lot of pressure on men in the Islamic world or from Muslim cultures. And particularly, I feel so bad for Muslim men that have to compete against Western men, right? Who are pretty much carefree individualist, like living as individuals, right? And, you know, like, I know my brother feels this pressure, and my cousin, and the males in my family, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I'm more intelligent than them, you know, and it's it bothers them because the culture demands that simply because you're male, you should learn more. And sometimes they just don't, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That can cause issues, you know, and
yeah, it creates an imbalance in the community because you have all of these bright young women that are considered lesser than, right? And they don't have the same potential. And there's a little bit of noise, background noise coming from, can you? I'm sorry, okay, hold on, let me just move you and add you back. Oh, 1 second. Okay, hello? Yeah, this. It's coming. This, yeah. It's. I guess it's just the quality of the connection's a little bit bad. Am I hearing myself? Can you hear?
Welcome to Australia.
could we try turning off your camera just for a minute? Let's see if that helps. It. Could you turn off your camera? Let's see if that helps. Let me see. Oh, there we go. Okay. Hello. Okay, yeah, it's better now. I don't hear that noise anymore. Kangaroo internet. Internet is definitely. I don't know if I can change the quality of the connection while I'm. Let me see if while I'm doing it. Okay. Let me try lowering my resolution. Okay, I lowered my resolution. I don't know if that. Noon, are you still here? Oh, you are still here. Okay. Let's unmute you and get you back on here. You're muted. If you can unmute yourself and let's see if the connection is fine now. And turn off your camera as well, just because it's the quality of the quality is fine, but I can't hear you right now. You're muted. Can you unmute it? Still muted. She got disconnected. All right. Well, while we're waiting for her, we were talking about how in Islam and in Muslim cultures, men are considered, you know, more intelligent and the breadwinners and this and that. And I'm lucky I personally didn't have to go through any of this because I was in a liberal Muslim family and we didn't have that issue. So it just was much better. It just didn't have, like, I don't have a sister, but I'm pretty sure if I did, it wouldn't have been any problem. So she would have had the same, you know, options I had. But then again, I had an Ismaili dad. So that's what I, you know, Ismailis are not like Sunnis, right? So things are different. Hopefully Noon will be able to come back in a second. Just checking my phone here if there's any messages from her. Noon, where is your internet? I'm just take off my headphones for a minute. All right, so here we are. We had a couple of things to talk about. One of them was men and women in the Islamic world. Oh, she's back. My headphones back on. Let me add you back to the chat, and let's see how the sound is now. Hello.
Back?
Okay, awesome. There we go. Continue what you were saying.
Sorry, I'm just absolutely appalled by this shocking Wi-Fi connection. Shout out to Scott Morrison and ASIO, whoever's watching. Anyway, sorry, what was I? Where was I?
With men and women and, you know, the expectation on men.
Yeah. So I just want to paint that picture for the never Muslims in the audience, right? So if men are expected to be the strongest, the smartest, I remember because I've got a little brother. I mean, well, he's not little, but I mean, younger than me. And I remember when I was a kid, right? He got into a fight with some little boys, and it was there were other little Muslim boys as well, and they beat him up. And you know, being the sister I am, you know, I've always had a bit of a fighting spirit, and I'm petty.
I can see that.
So yeah. I went out and I took a cricket bat and I don't know, I did something to the boy anyways, and I helped my brother along anyway. Mm-hmm. We got him back, you know. And my brother was absolutely livid. He was appalled. Like that day he made me swear on everything. He's like, I don't care if I'm getting beaten up by these people. He's like, you just made it worse. No, but he's like, nobody has a sister that will fight for them, you know. He's like, you know, just, you know. So after that day, and my mom yelled at me as well too. She's like, yeah, let him get beat, you know. Everybody was like, let him, like, anyways. So I thought I was helping, you know, because he was really injured and I felt bad for him. And, you know, anyway. So
that's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that kind of thing. And like, I see it with my cousins as well too. And I just want to stretch it out, right? And because this is the root of honor violence, right? When people are like, how did that brother kill that sister or whatever? What happens is the community has social expectations, right? So I remember when my brother went, so we have this culture in East Africa of, it's called, we call it dakanelis, meaning return to the culture, meaning they send all their kids, like the would-be boys that were about to fall off, you know, any kind of girl that's wild, they send them back home. Obviously, it's kind of like a rehab. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's like a pre-rehab before you're on drugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Before that, yeah. So my parents did it to my brother at a certain age in his teenhood or whatever. So I remember he was gone for a few years. Yeah. And I remember leaving my house one day, and I remember I was wearing just jeans and a t-shirt. And I remember just thinking it was a pretty... I mean, it was an ordinary outfit, you know. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. So I was walking down, you know, outside my mum's house, and I'd been stopped by a bunch of my brother's madrasa friends. Mm-hmm. And these were just like a bunch of mixed ethnicity, all Muslim boys, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was wearing pants. At the time, you know, I'm 31 now, so I don't know whenever this was, but back then it wasn't really common for Muslim girls to wear pants, you know mm-hmm. what I mean,
yeah.
And jeans. So these boys like literally surrounded me and they were like, oh, you know, does your brother know what you're doing? You know? And I'm like, my brother's shipped off. We sent him just to Africa. Younger than me anyway. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I beat you up when you were 9. Like, anyway, okay. You know, like, they're all older and much more aggressive. They're like 17.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I was 17. They were like 14, but they were big, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember the way they were slut shaming me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, your brother, you know, you just, you know, can't believe you would dress like this, you know? Mm. And I remember just like, you know, I don't take things lightly, you know, it's just whatever. I told him to F off and left. But I remember just being shaken and being so angry, right? Like, I wasn't intimidated by them physically, like, oh, they're going to hit me or whatever. But I was like, these boys, shamed me, like mm-hmm. they pretended like my little brother was an authority over me. Like, it just didn't, I guess in my Australian sensibilities, it wasn't computing what was happening, right?
Yeah.
So now looking back in hindsight, that was honor abuse, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. was a form of honor abuse I was experiencing, but I just didn't realize. And that I just want to build that up, right? So for some women, right, that come from even stricter families, maybe have all brothers, only, you know, maybe one brother that's, I don't know, whatever. And you can see easily how a man's ego in the Islamic world can be extremely fragile. I mean, you're expected to be the best, the brightest, the smartest, the richest, you know, and if you're not that, then are you looking after your women, you know? So for some men, they don't do anything at all. Like, they don't go to school. They can be losers in every aspect of their life. But the one good thing they're good at is monitoring those women in their lives, and meaning, AKA harassing them, you know, abusing them. So I hope that kind of illustrates how honor violence, like the beginnings of where a man would get that kind of sense of urgency to harm a female relative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of, yeah. So also, and that also leads to, again, like I said, for sex relations, I believe there's a lot of things that we have to unlearn, right? So we have to unlearn the, it's obviously unrealistic for any man to be the strongest, the smartest, the you know, you can't be Usain Bolt, Steve Jobs, you know, all these people all into one, you know what I mean? I think we can accept that it's unrealistic for any man to be, just like it's unrealistic for any man, any woman to have a perfect body and, you know, perfect or whatever, you know. So I think that men from the Islamic world and ex-Muslim men have a general intimidation of actualized women, whether they will acknowledge it or not. And I think men are even more reluctant to, you know, seek therapy and kind of work through and unpack these things than women are. So this intimidation of actualized and equal women persists even in the Western world. And I want to implore all ex-Muslim men and even Muslim men to open their ears to this, because you will have female bosses if you're living in the West. I mean, you can kick rocks and go back to the Islamic world. I mean, we're not missing you if you want. But if you're going to stay in the West, you know what? You might have a female president. You might have a female. You're going to have female everything, you know, female police officers, thingo. So you need to know how to act, you know, that female, you don't have control over you. She has authority over you. She knows more than you. You need to be able to respect her. You need to be able to respect females, period. You know what I mean? And if you can't do that, you need to leave the West. You need to leave the UK. You need to leave the US. You need to leave Canada, Sweden, you know. Saudi Arabia is popping. You need to go there, okay? And so the next thing I think we've got to unlearn is homophobia. Now, regardless of what your opinions are on same-sex marriage, I do appreciate that it is valid for religious people to not accept same-sex marriage. For me, I accept that. I mean, the same religious people are trying to behead me too, so I don't really care, you know? But I think what is unacceptable is if you live in the West, homophobia, expressed homophobia, the hatred of LGBT people. Now, there's no argument. There really is no argument. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear your thoughts and your feelings about LGBT people. So keep them to yourself, you know, just keep them to yourself. You, no one's asking you to marry the gay people. So just keep them to yourself. And that is a really big one, because a lot of people think this is optional. No, it's not optional. It's part of your refugee visa. And if you weren't the refugee, your parents are refugee visa. Otherwise, again, you know where you can go? Pakistan. You know where you can go? Somalia. And actually, Somalia and Pakistan need you. You know what I mean? They need nurses. They need your, just take your bad energy there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not all of them are refugees, though. Some of them are immigrants or even what? Or even born Canadians, like
no, but they need to go back though. It doesn't matter, because they can teach people English. They can take their skills. You know what I'm saying? Like, take your skills. If you, what I'm trying to say is, if you don't like the cold in Canada, the snow in Canada, the snow's not going anywhere. Okay. Yeah. What you need to do is either invest in a jacket, North Face, off you go down. No, seriously, it has to be. Nobody's changing for you. This was the problem with our people. They think people are going to change for you. Canada is not going to become homophobic because you're a homophobe. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so
Canada,
you need to go to Pakistan.
Canada might become homophobic. Canada might become homophobic if there's enough homophobes in Canada. That's the problem, right? That is the worry. I mean, that's why I feel like it's important that we always keep talking about this. It's just, we can never just take it for granted, right?
Exactly. You know what I mean? And in Canada won't be homophobic. I mean, I don't foresee that happening.
Yeah, I don't.
Soon. It's the law of the land anyway. And it's the dominant law of the land. So I'm talking about, again, like I'm going back to Islamic law. Islamic law means being homosexual is banned. So what I'm trying to say is, now, I don't care if you go to the Maldives or Somalia, whichever Muslim country you want, you choose it, but you need to go to it. You know what I mean? Let me visit Toronto. I want to be in Toronto. You know what I mean? I want to enjoy the snow in Montreal. If you don't want to enjoy it, you need to kick rocks.
Yeah.
Anyway, next. So just the general, if you're going to come to the West, or if you're living in the West, right, and you're a man and a Muslim man, you really need to kind of relinquish the idea of male guardianship. Okay. You don't own your female relatives. you're not also responsible for them. You know what I mean? If Fatima commits a murder or a rape, guess what? She will be held accountable. We're arresting her. She's going to jail. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She's going to court. It's a solo thing. Nobody mm-hmm. is asking Fatima's mother, Aisha, for a statement. It's not a collective group thing. Do you get what I'm saying? So let's be individuals. Let your sisters free.
Well, don't they question the family if there's a murder in general?
No, they don't. What? Okay, if you commit a murder, so they're going to go to your parents and be like...
Well, yeah, when they have those school shooters, they go to the mom of the school shooter and they ask her, like, what...
They question the mom.
Yes,
question the mom. They question the family, but they're not they're not pressing charges with
them. No, of course not.
In the Islamic world, it's a whole tribe, Like, for example, you know, I was talking to my stepmom. And, you know, she was talking to me about my YouTube appearances, you know, and she was like, you know, kind of, you know, because it's reached the Ethiopian community, it's kind of gone viral and stuff like that. And she's like to me, you know, we had a really great conversation. It's really emotional for me because I really do really love my family. And honestly, through being an open ex-Muslim, I've actually learned to appreciate them so much more. Oh my God, now I appreciate the Sufis so much. I used to laugh at my mum's like extra, you know, like kind of eccentricities and stuff like that. I'm like, yes, mom, sprinkle the holy water. At least it's better than like beatings that the other ex-Muslims are getting. Like all my mom, all she does is she make a dua for you. You know, she's got like little Sufi. Anyway. So
yeah.
Oh my God, where was I? I'm completely all over the place. Okay. So
while I'm waiting, while you're just catching up on what you want to talk about, I just want to address this comment. Islam is not homophobic. It does not agree with homosexuality. if you believe that these human beings don't have the right to love who they want to love, that's homophobia. If you think that they should be discriminated against, I mean, we're not even talking about discrimination. Islamic law... do I even need to remind you what Islamic law says? What is a punishment for gay sex? Like, that's even worse than it's not just dehumanization. It's not just discrimination. It's murder. It's genocide of gays. I mean, this is like mm-hmm. as bad as you can get. I don't know what type of Islam you follow. If you don't believe that, maybe you follow some sort of wishy-washy Islam, but I mean, just going by the Sunni Hadith, it's pretty homophobic.
it absolutely is, without a doubt it is. And I'm sorry, I just forgot my train of thought. That's what I was going to say to you before. With Islam, basically your whole tribe is going to be held accountable for the things that you do, you know what I mean? And so, for example, my auntie is a lesbian, and mm-hmm. my entire tribe and family has been tormented by the wider Somali community because we have gay relatives that we refuse to kill and actually love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But do they
expect you to kill your relatives? Or,
no, they don't expect us to kill. They did expect my mum to cut her sister off.
That was a big deal. Okay.
So, the thing is, it's my mum's younger sister, you know what I mean? And my mum comes from there's like 8 or 9 sisters, and they're tight like the Kardashian, like they're like real tight, you know what I mean? So yeah. It was very, like, even though my mom's very religious, does not agree with her sister's, mom's homophobe, I'll just be honest with that. She loves her sister so much, you know what I mean? It's her baby sister, so yeah. Anyway, so that back to what my stepmom was trying to tell me, she was basically trying to say to me that, you know, we love you. She's like, I don't really care what you are. She's like, I don't, if you were to convert to Judaism or Christianity or whatever, we would come and do whatever, you know? She's just like, I just wanted to say, like, it's affecting us, you know? And I'm like, what do you mean, you know? And that's when it really struck me. She's like, you know, it's kind of like we're being targeted and harassed and kind of maligned and bullied. And it's something that you can maybe tolerate, but, you know, not all of us are built like that. And that kind of really hit home for me because I, you know, I do view myself as an individual and obviously a pretty proud Australian individual. But, you know, my family is very much part of the tribe, you know, mm-hmm. And they bear the consequences of, you know, my lifestyle, my opinions. And it is really unfair, you know, and it's unfair. And, you know, to those Muslims out there, they're probably like, you know what, then you should probably just stop being yourself. You know what I mean? And maybe that would all go away. I say to you, no, you're part of the problem and you're the reason why my family is being harassed. People like you are the problem. And reevaluate that, you know, because I'm not going away. And even if I go away, there's plenty of me to come. We're just going to multiply. So anyways, yeah. And that's what I actually did want to say. I forgot that point before. So I came out around 2017 and I gained notoriety around 2018 or whatever via Twitter. But now I was going to say, when I first came out, it was, you know, I was doxxed. Actually, I'm not going to say I came out. I actually didn't come out. I was doxxed.
As an ex-Muslim, you mean?
Yeah, as an ex-Muslim, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I was doxxed repeatedly, viciously attacked, sent rape and death threats, even down to, you know, people sending me Muslims, be clear. Muslim, I should be very specific. Somali, and Arab, and, you know, the occasional Pakistani. But really, the attacks came from the Somali community. My Somalis were threatening my mom, you know, and this is from Somalis from Minnesota, people that had gotten asylum in, you know, to get asylum is to seek refuge. Remember that, right?
Yeah.
So these people had sought asylum in Minnesota, in Canada, in Sweden, in the UK, in wherever, right? And they have the audacity to turn around and viciously attack members of their community that don't behave as we did back home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was doxxed. You know, I didn't have a choice, you know, like I was forced. So I just want, I want every Somali Muslim that has the audacity to slander or malign me to know that this is a toxic community. And thanks to Qarxis, which is the Somali word for explosion, you know, I exploded, you know. So hi, guys, you're seeing me everywhere. So yeah, I was doxxed a lot. And so that was back in 2017. And I wanted to make the point that, no, we absolutely won't die and we absolutely are multiplying. Since then, it's 2021 now. You know, it's so, it's, you know, we have normalized dissent in the Somali community in ways that I could have never have dreamed. You know, 2017, I was shaking like that. You know, I was getting death threats, rape threats, like just everybody. And then not only that, death threats, rape threats, and then being distanced from like my close family, my relatives, people that I would have thought would have protected me, were like, you're on your own. Whatever happens to you, you know, type thing. So now in 2021, to be Muslim and gay, LGBT is pretty much the norm in the Somali community. Everybody, people, you know, it's funny. So you'll see now Somali, you know, out LGBT people, right? And they'll might say, hey, I'm not a Muslim or something. They say something against Islam. They're like, hey, you might be gay, but I mean, do you want to like leave God? Like, I mean, that's a bit, you know. So yeah. I find that hilarious, you know what I mean? And to me, it warms my heart because for me, especially when it comes to the LGBT issue, like I've always wanted acceptance for my own relatives, you know, and my own relatives haven't left Islam, you know, even my, you know, lesbian auntie, you know, she really disagrees with my surprisingly atheist views. so yeah, but you know,
strange, she's probably different. Yeah.
So anyways, what time are we on? Oh my God. In the interest of time, I'm going to rush through finance. Let me just, because I think there's more that, there's a lot that could be said, honestly, on each of these subjects, and I'm probably not doing it justice. We could really go on about this for hours and get into everything. But I'll just touch on women, right? Some of the things, because I think I've covered enough of some of the ideas that I think men need to hold on to, right? And, So for women, the scarcity mentality. Okay, so when we talk about the scarcity mentality in Islam, you know, women have only the half intellect of men. So these are some of the ideas that Islam quite literally preaches via the Quran in conjunction with the hadiths, right?
Yeah.
So that other women are your competition. And teaches you that by, because it literally says that in Jahannam, which is hell, the Islamic hell, it says that women are the majority in hell. And the reasons that women are the majority is because we like to gossip. Men aren't in hell for rape. Rape and gossip. According to Allah, gossiping. Wendy Williams is worse than Harvey Weinstein. Actually, let that sink in. Wendy Williams is worse than Harvey Weinstein in the eyes of Allah. Okay. Anyway, so gossiping, we do makeup, you know, I think, and it wasn't makeup. Hang on.
It was ungrateful to the husband.
Oh, no, eyebrows.
And I curse much.
And eyebrows.
Yeah.
It's something petty like that. Anyway, I don't know. Look, do your own research. And, you know, I wanted to take something, go wind it all the way back, right? To with these Muslims, a lot of Muslims think the ex-Muslim movement started on Twitter or in cyberspace. And I have to tell you guys, obviously, you aren't familiar with Islamic history, because actually the apostate wars began after the Prophet died. We have been fighting this war for 1400 years. Make no mistake about it. Islam keeps breaking like this. It's the religion of pieces for a reason. You know what I mean? Because we've had so many battles. There's so much errors. There's so much. This has been, like I said, we're just, you know, the apostate wars did not start on Twitter. Okay?
Be clear.
Shout out to my fave, I was going to say, apostate prophet. Sending him love always. I feel like he's done the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Anyway. So this scarcity mentality. And also in Islam, because men are allowed to marry for women and they're allowed to marry women from the ages of 9 till infinity. Hang on. And also there's a law, there's a hadith, don't quote me, but there's a hadith that literally says that you can't marry a barren woman.
No. There's a hadith that says that where the Prophet recommended a man to marry a virgin over someone that was married before, because he said you can play with her and she can play with you. And he said, no, I wanted a woman that had experience, because I have a lot of sisters and my mom died or something.
And then he said no, because he said go with the virgin, because and he actually loved her. No, the man was actually in love with the woman. And if she wasn't a virgin, she was barren or something. And he's like, no, don't get with a woman that can't have kids.
That might be a different hadith of what I was thinking. Yeah, there could be one. Look, yeah, because that wouldn't surprise me, because Islam is all about having lots of kids, and Muhammad wanted lots of potential soldiers, and he wanted a big army and like a big population.
Yeah, he canceled this love story. He canceled like a little Arabian love and drew. And he's like, no. Allah is against this. Anyway. Right. So the next thing, so women are your competition, right? I was going to say women, there's like straight competition between Islamic women, and it's relentless. It is vicious. And I want to say to anybody that's like to me, no, Muslim sisters love each other. I'm like, Google, what you need to do is right now, Google ISIS wives after ISIS left them. After ISIS left them and they got abandoned in the refugee camps, you see those women, they are street fighting like it's like Mortal Kombat, literally. I'm telling you. But in niqabs, it's the best. It's like World Star. Oh my God, I'm so petty. Look, it is kind of like World Star though, you know what I mean? But ISIS wives, you know, they're punching on with each other over small things. And you know Shamima Banger? She was scared of the other women. She's like, I'm not safe here. They're like, but ISIS is gone, you know? She's like, yeah, but the other women, you know? Like, you know, they fight each other over like little makeup, you know what I mean? Who looks better, you know what I mean? Who can have more kids? It's ridiculous. The viciousness in the Islamic Muslim community, like the kind of gossip culture. Also the culture of like marrying husbands. It's honest to God, like that's one thing I don't miss. There's a lot of things I don't miss about Islam, but one thing I don't miss is shout out to any of the girlfriends, the Muslim girlfriends that are probably like, oh, she's not in the community anymore. Meanwhile, I'm just like, oh, you guys all gossip about each other and laugh about each other. And you can't tell each other when you guys are actually sad on the inside, you know what I mean? Because of shame culture, but okay, go off. Hijabs are on a bit too tight. Anyway, Okay, yeah. So basically, the next thing that I've noticed with ex-Muslim women is they have this kind of, like, really unique kind of CTC, cognitive behavioral, or cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT.
Yeah.
Cognitive behavioral, yeah, they need CBT for that. So they need to unpack and unlearn men owning your body and sexuality, and that women kind of, from the Islamic world, actually need to be taught and told that you are an autonomous individual sexual being, and you can seek pleasure, you can see, have sex for pleasure, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be for procreation all the time.
Yep.
And you know, men don't own your sexuality or your body. Also, you don't, honestly, I implore all Muslim women and all ex-Muslim women to seek this kind of unlearning, right? Because you know, I feel like a lot of ex-Muslim women could be vulnerable to get into like hashtag Me Too situations, because you know, because they've been programmed and taught from a young age that if you dress in this certain way, right, and just say you're sexually assaulted, it's your fault. You know what I mean? We are taught that, you know what I mean? We are taught quite literally. If you try to sexually assault me, I'm just going to put it out there. It's physical assault. I'm going to physically assault you. I'm just saying. There's no hashtag Me Too when it comes to norm. It's going to be you too. Anyway. Oh, yeah. So also modesty, unlearning modesty, being modesty being only in dress. Now, I'm not saying, because I don't think modesty as a concept for women or men is a bad thing. You know, I think we all should be modest, right? You know what I mean? But, you know, you could be modest in behavior, you know what I mean? And demeanor, and you can be humble, you know, that's a form of modesty. And it doesn't need to be about your dress. You know what I mean? You could be naked and a modest person, you know, humble, down to earth, you know? So yeah, I just wanted to say that there are other forms of modesty. And yeah, just like I said, that competitive collective culture, that kind of, you know, like what Muslim and ex-Muslim women need to learn is the growth mindset. You know what I mean? That you can grow things, you know, put a seed in the ground and, you know, nurture it and grow it. And, you know, you can have your own garden rather than steal from somebody else's or diminish somebody else's through gossip or slander or whatever. Right. So again, these are not exhaustive lists. This is just a general thing that I've just put together. Of course, you can add your own. Just don't discount for me. But anyway, moving on, finance. Finance is a big one. This is something that people from the Islamic world both men and women, all of us struggle with, right? And because for a few different reasons, like for example, a lot of people, a lot of ex-Muslim women that I come into contact with, they're in their 20s and they have never had a job, okay? And even Muslim women, a lot of my female cousins, a lot of my little cousins and stuff like that, I'm pretty proud to say that I've had a job since I was 14 and 9 months. But that's really actually uncommon. That's what I found amongst Muslim women, you know? And the reason is because what I found was when I was working at 14, 9 months, firstly, I had to beg the hell out of my mum for the year beforehand. I had to do so many things so I could like earn a bit of cash for myself, because the belief was from my mum's friends and other Muslim women that she hang out with is that if you let a girl work, that she will have resources, and obviously everything ends up to you being a whore and you know, whatever, you know, but that you could run away. Of course, once you have resources, you can always get away from the tribe, and the tribe always wants to have control of you because they want the control of your thoughts. So once you have resources, you can potentially become a liberated human being, and that's never in the interest of the collective tribe. So
and is that also why FGM is a big thing?
FGM is about sexual
control, eh?
Yeah, sexual control, and women not ever having an urge. The idea is they cut the clitoris and damage the vagina. So women don't enjoy sex, they don't seek sex, and they don't need men.
So it's again a control situation again, where they don't want women to go out and.
Yeah, so my people believe it's a way for them to kind of control the female part. They do it to young girls, so later on you're never going to seek love. You know, you're never going to be like Romeo and Juliet. How are you going to do it? You know what I mean? Mm. That's so anyway.
That's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea. Anyway, so the short so basically. What I've found is a lot of Muslim and ex-Muslim women and men too, they're literally crippled by their parents. Their parents will give them money, not because their parents will buy them iPads. You know, all these Muslim kids, you know, look at them, look around them, decked out in Nike. None of them work. You know, you'll see, I implore you to go to any of these London little Islamic zones. I swear, it's quite shocking, especially like East London and stuff. I remember when I visited. But you see all these kids and stuff, they're decked out in the latest, you know, the latest, just like these Westerner kids, right? But these Westerner kids actually have little jobs, you know, may have got, you know, they might have been saving up for that PlayStation for Christmas gift or something like that. These Muslim kids are actually getting it cashed out to them. And that's so their parents have control over them in this so-called uncontrollable society, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of financial control that Muslim parents have. I'm just conscious of the time. I've got so much to add and so little time. So what's happening is there's a lot of, what I'm basically trying to say is we have a lot of people in the Muslim world that are not sufficient. They're not self-sufficient, okay? And this is an issue, especially ex-Muslims, okay? Hear me now. A lot of y'all want to come to Twitter, okay? Whilst you're in your mum's basement, whilst you're eating your mum's ash, you know what I'm saying? Screaming about her prophet. Now, let's be fair here. Let's be fair to these Muslim mothers here, you know, because I mean, I have a Muslim mum too. I don't live with her, and I did not live with her or was using any of her resources when I was slandering her religion, you know? I think it does matter, you know? I really do think it does matter. I think, you know, obviously you guys don't pay bills, you know, so you don't understand a simple thing called respect, you know. Hard work is hard work, you know what I mean? And, you know, people, you know, earn their livings based on hard work. So what I'm trying to say is a lot of these ex-Muslims are super entitled. So they leave, so they want to slander Islam. They come to the internet, they slander Islam. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, they're going home. They're slandering Islam by eating their Islamic mother's ash, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Eating her biryani, talking shit about her prophet, you know? And then they were like, oh my God. And then they'll come back to the internet and like, go fund me, guys. You know what I mean? Go fund me because now I'm kicked out. I can't eat that biryani no more. And guys, can you help me? I need therapy because I miss that biryani.
Yeah. Well, I have sympathy for some of these people because, you know, being in a situation where you can't speak your mind and you're surrounded by Islam everywhere, you know, sometimes that's got to come out somehow, right? People have to let it out and like somehow communicate that, right?
No, I'm sorry. You own a house. You have a house right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not a vegan. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not a vegan. I have siblings. They are not allowed to be vegans and stay with me. Okay. It's just as simple as that. You're not going to come to my house under my roof. Okay. Mm-hmm. Preach to me whatever you're going through. Here's the thing. What I'm trying to say is this is the chicken before the egg. You need to have your ducks lined up. You need to bide your time, okay? Maybe you can't be a public ex-Muslim. Maybe you can just keep your thoughts to yourself. Maybe you can come up with a non-violent communication style. And when you deliver this really intense news to your family, maybe they'll... It's going to take a lot of conversations, you know what I mean? And I feel like there's a certain level of... I don't mean to sound harsh. I'm just being real. I'm practical. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of ex-Muslims out here that are unnecessarily severing ties that they need. You know, a lot of these ex-Muslims, being ex-Muslim has nothing to do with the fact that you cannot survive on your own. Mm-hmm. You're not equipped. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, now, of course. No, but it is in some cases. Like I know one Afghani ex-Muslim girl, she was on the channel. Her dad didn't let her study at all. You know what I mean? There are people like that. Like, yes.
No, I understand that. But what I'm trying to say is we need to make up plans. This is what I'm trying. This is why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need to make a realistic plan, a holistic plan. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And finance has to be part of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't put the cart before the horse. You know what I mean? A lot of these people want to go to Twitter and scream. And here's the thing, what I'm trying to say to you is I'm not saying that you, listen, I'm an ex-Muslim myself. You know what I mean? I'm here today to have this conversation as a public ex-Muslim, knowing all the risks. So I'm not saying to you, don't use your voice. In fact, we need more of you. But what I'm trying to say is, we don't need more casualties. You know what I mean? And this is what's happening right now. It's a bloodbath. You know what I mean? We have, right now, Zara K is being silenced. You know, we have, right now, we've got really public senior ex-Muslims that that are really being harmed, right? So what I'm trying to say is, come equipped, come ready, come to the fray ready and being prepared. And this, that which would lead me to my next thing about violence, right? But finance is necessary. Mm-hmm. Every war needs finance, you know what I mean? And this one is no different, you know? So you need to be in a place where you can stand on your own two feet before you can express those controversial opinions. Because recognize, it's not me, it's 13 Muslim countries around the world that behead you simply for stating that you don't leave Islam. Nobody cares about all these other factors. So I'm trying to be realistic and practical here and say, if you don't have money, can you afford to apostatize? Think about it. Can you afford to apostatize?
Of course, you shouldn't come out publicly until you have your situation at home being stable, and or you have your own place or whatever.
You live by yourself, you're good, you're financial, you built yourself a support system, you've got your network. Scream from the rooftops, mate. You know, come up. We want to see you on Fox News. Trust me. You know what I mean? I'm damn sure I'm not gonna do it. So look, listen, I'm just being real. And here's the thing. Don't DM me. I don't care about your feedback either way. You know what I mean? And this is what I'm trying to get at. Me personally, I get a lot of DMs, and it's the recurring theme since 2017, the same stuff. Norn, I'm broke. Should I start up a GoFundMe? Norn, I don't know. You know, like, I like my mom. She's good to me. But, you know, I like her biryani. I like living in her basement. But, you know, F her profit.
Yeah.
Like, but which, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, which one is it? Like,
but like, you know, the problem here to me is that there's how do I say this? So there's a relationship that needs to be managed here with the ex-Muslim child and the parent. If the son or the child is doing something privately and they're being exposed to their parents, that's a different story. Like, I know, for example, people in EXMNA that, to no fault of their own, they were exposed to their family members. Like, either the brother or sister ratted them out. They didn't mean to come out, right? And they post online. They have videos. Even some of them have blogs. Some of them have YouTube channels. But they don't show their face or anything. But they get ratted out by someone. And then the whole situation is a big disaster at home now. Now, I don't know any of them were asked for GoFundMes. I actually don't know many ex-Muslims ask for GoFundMes.
I was doxxed as well. Yeah. No, I completely understand. I was doxxed.
Yeah, yeah.
I completely understand that. And I have absolute every empathy for, but that's not who I'm talking about. You know what I mean? These people are like myself. I was doxxed. I had no intention of being some kind of, you know, freedom fighter.
Yeah.
I really didn't, you know, I was minding my business. But unfortunately, the nature of being an apostate is such an inflammatory and shocking thing for people. And we live in a gossip culture, the gossip network. I've talked about this before, the gossip networks. So, you know, this kind of news spreads like wildfire. I received a text message, you know, from my Muslim friend saying, are you an ex-Muslim? You know what I mean? Like, this is before I'd ever come to YouTube, you know. So I get that, but that's not who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to that 19-year-old, that spoiled 19-year-old child that comes from a relatively okay Muslim family.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's got the Xbox and iPad decked out in Nike. You know what I mean? The mum just bought you. Your mum just bought you Jordans, man. You know what I mean? You're missing the profit? Come on now.
Yeah.
She just made you biryani. All I'm saying is let's be. And also, you have to remember that. Let's be honest. These Westerners, we will never, like, I mean, I was born in Australia, but till this day, people ask me, so when do you get here? really wonderful how you like speak English like us. You know what I mean? We're never that's true. It's true. I'm never going to be Australian. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to throw my people under the bus. Like my mum might believe in strange and unusual things. She does, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not like, I think we also have to, it's like give and take. You know what I'm saying? The Western culture has a lot of flaws as well too. You know, so like I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, so where I'm saying, what I'm trying to encourage ex-Muslims is where you can salvage a connection, do it. So for me, for example, I have Somali friends that I've grown up with and love and stuff like that. We have come to a place where I don't share my opinions. They know what I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't share my opinions on the Prophet and stuff like that because I don't want to offend them. I mean, I don't care about the Prophet, but it's their Prophet. You know what I mean? And I want to have a relationship with those individuals. So I'm not going to share my direct opinion. Where I draw the line is things like of matters of integrity. Like, for example, just say if somebody's like, you know, being obviously, you know, misogynistic, homophobic or whatever. So I'm not going to like, even my family members, my cousins, stuff, they don't do it with me anymore because I'll get up and leave or I'll cause a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm that person. So they've got through causing scenes like that, it's made them realize, okay, yep, we'll keep those opinions to ourselves until she leaves, you know? So I that's my opinion. My opinion is we're already outsiders here in the West. Let's not sever every tie if we don't need to, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. I think, yeah, definitely use a bit of brain cells and just be a little bit cautious about what you say, what you're doing, and how it can affect your relationship at home. You have the right to say whatever you want to, but if you're gonna, you need to understand that sometimes, you know, what you say comes with consequences. And so keep that in mind if you're going to talk about Islam online and you're living with Muslim family members, it can cause problems. So that's simple, right.
Okay, which leads me, I think this is a really great segue actually to violence, okay, and coming out, okay, which is
and
pretty much my conclusion.
By the way, I know you said you had to go, eh? You still have time?
It's okay. So honestly, at this point, like I said to you, I was already running late. Sorry, I'll make
time. Okay, finish up.
Figure it out. So violence, I just want to talk about, so violence in the Islamic world is extremely different. Violence in the East, let's just say generally, is looked at as very, we don't talk, you know, like I explained, like, okay, so Parliament House in Australia is built on like the Westminster system, right? And I love this fact so much. I know it's so simple, but I don't know. I love it because coming from where I do, it's really relevant. So Parliament House is built on the concept of the opposition and the government sitting exactly two swords apart from each other. And the reason is for that is because it's symbolic that they don't fight with swords, they now fight with words. And I love that so much because in the East we still fight very much with swords and we're rather proud of it. So I would like to, with that in mind, I want people that are thinking of leaving Islam or thinking about publicly criticizing it to recognize that you will be bullied and harassed. I'm so sorry to tell you. I have, Abdullah has, we all have. It's ongoing. It doesn't stop. They're actually now bullying my family members, you know? Like,
jeez. It's,
they're bullying my family members. It is that bad, you know?
Yeah.
You will be harassed. These people are not the kind of people that understand talking debates. Sifting through evidence, you know, it's crime and punishment. So I just want you to know a few things. Know the reasons why you think the way you do and be prepared to defend yourself. The same intellect you had that helped you reach the conclusions that you have today, you must use that same intelligence and energy to defend yourself. You know what I'm saying? So like, I get a lot of ex-Muslims like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I say? You know, like, you know, my family, people are, you know, attacking my character. And I'm like, how did you come to the conclusion anyway? I mean, how did you meet Noon anyway? Like, it's not like I did not help you the same. So what I'm trying to say is use the same reasons you left Islam as your defense, you know, just say it, you know, I don't like it because of verse 434. Mm. And they're like, what verse? Surah An-Nisa. They're like, what's Surah An-Nisa? Like, you don't know your own Quran. Exactly. You know, you just got to just use what you know already, mm-hmm. if that's the route you're going. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And so my next point is, knowing the truth is not about finding your tribe. You will be disappointed. The truth has no friends. And yeah, if that's what you think, you know, if you think ex-Muslim is about being popular, if anybody thinks being ex-Muslim is about finding your tribe, I'm so sorry to tell you, you will not find your tribe. If you think it's about becoming popular, I'm sorry. I'm telling you, I was popular. You know what I mean? I'm probably infamous, canceled, yeah. most hated, uninvited, disinvited. You're not going to be popular, right? And no, nobody's. You know what? I'm so not popular that it's gotten so bad that now, forget about Muslims staying away from me in Melbourne, in the city that I live. I have now a problem of never people that have never been Muslim, but, you know, they're all hipsters, you know, hashtag Black Lives Matter, you know, vegans. You know, these types are cancelling me. You know, they don't want to be my friend, or mm-hmm. they want to distance themselves. You know what I mean? I'm a bit too difficult. So I want to tell this to any would-be, because, and I, true story, there's this Arab guy, all right? He had the audacity to DM me. We'll call for a bit, ex-Muslim guy. And he was actually getting married. And shout out, I want you to know who he is. He was actually getting married to a Muslim girl, but he's ex-Muslim. And I have to say this, and I'm so sorry to offend. I don't mean to offend you, Abdullah Samir, but I feel like a lot of ex-Muslim guys leave Islam for sexual reasons rather than any kind of, like, they're sexually repressed. They leave because they're sexually repressed. Like this guy, for example, he had, he was bi-curious, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And couldn't reconcile that. And that's why mm-hmm. he had an issue with Islam. But mm-hmm. really, in a way, he's still, anyway. So yeah, this guy said to me with his whole chest, he's like, you know what, Noor, you know, I'm thinking of leaving my partner and, you know, just coming out and, you know, becoming like you and, you know, starting a YouTube channel. And he's like, I think because I'm Arab, he literally said this to me, he goes, I think because I'm Arab, you know, I'm not going to be like you, you know? He's like, I think I'll get much, much more clout. You know what I mean? I was like, much more clout? Okay. I'm like, you probably would, though. You probably would. It's true, you know? But the idea that he's like, yeah, I know, I can't wait to get the clout, you know what I mean? I can't wait. And he's like, oh, I'll probably, you know, write a book and this and that. He had this whole, like, outline, you know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, mate, you know, good luck, you know what I mean? I hope it works out for you, Ahmed, or whatever his name was, you know? Anyway, I said this to say, that is really, like, that Ayaan Hirsi route is really intense. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people are going to go on it. And the idea that there's clout in it is so asinine. Like, talk to apostate Muhammad, you know? I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. the apostate prophet, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or the ex-MNA guys, you know, Sarah Hayner, send a message to Muhammad Saeed, who's been ex-Muslim since, I think, 2011. There's no clout to be gained. You will be murdered. I'm so sorry to tell you. You know, mm-hmm. you will be murdered or go missing. And I'm sorry to tell you, none of these Caucasians are even going to put you on CNN, whatever. Mm-hmm. CNN, Fox News. You're not going to be on No Missing. Nobody's going to care. You know what I mean? So I just want you to know that there's no popularity or friendship in being ex-Muslim. Even ex-Muslims are not friends. I'll be honest with you. I don't have any ex-Muslim friends. I mean, Abdullah's cool, but he's not my friend. You know, I just using his platform, you know. But, and I don't, and the Somali ex-Muslims are me. I'll be honest with you. It was a lot of trauma bonding. You know what I mean? They weren't friends. And there's a lot of resentment that comes, especially when you're well-functioning, you know, and adjusting well. So honestly, my experience, I'd stay far away, very far away from ex-Muslims myself personally, because there's no friendship and there's a lot of trauma bonding. It's just strange. I have my own friends.
Mm-hmm. What's trauma bonding?
So trauma bonding, the idea of bonding over a trauma, traumas, shared traumas.
Mm-hmm. So is that a bad thing?
Extremely bad. I mean, it can be. Look, I'm not
like, isn't that what like AAA is all about? Like, you're meeting other people.
Yeah, but you do that in a meeting and you leave the meeting. You know what I mean? You don't become friends. In AA, because I've done a bit of community service work, mental health work, and stuff like that in those sectors. And let me tell you, it's like they don't encourage people in the mental hospital to become friends. They don't encourage the schizophrenic and the bipolar to become friends. So what I'm trying to say is from my experience anyways, like I made the mistake. I'll be straight up, full disclosure. I don't have a lot of in common with like a lot of Somali migrants, refugees that have come. Like they're refugees, I'm not. And like my parents actually didn't even, were skilled migrants actually when they came to Australia in the 80s. So there's a lot of, even their family dynamics and everything that I can't relate to, like a lot of, so I just found that a lot of them would end up resenting me. It was that kind of irrational competition. It just became very toxic. And yeah, so that's why I started off with things that we had to unlearn in the sex thingo, you know what I mean? But anyway, so yeah, I just really wanted to go on about the violence and say that, you know, in conclusion, yeah, it's funny.
So if I can just kind of push back on one thing just before you go on. I find it kind of like a strange idea to think that people need to leave Islam because they're secularly oppressed. Muslims, I think, do a lot of like they go to clubs and they, you know, like I'll give you an example. I have a cousin who, like, you know how you said your auntie is lesbian? I mean, doesn't that sort of go against what you were just saying? Like, I have cousins like that too, that they go clubbing, they drink alcohol, they do weed, they do everything. But they're Muslim and they're like, yeah, you're wrong about leaving Islam and atheism. They don't understand my perspective. But I'm like, I don't understand your perspective as a Muslim. You're doing all these things.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, this is the gayest community. I say Muslim community is the gayest community in the world. Honestly, what I've come to find out is a lot of Muslim men are having sex with other Muslim men at the masjid around. It's really, it's a real gay community. I swear to God, it's true. There's a lot of, and that's why there's so much vicious homophobia here. And there's a hatred across the genders. And there's a lot of lesbians as well, too. You know, there's a lot of, it's not just a lot of people are sexually repressed. I think more so than anything else, than people being secret drug addicts or secretly, I think people are more so sexually repressed and forced into heteronormative paradigms that they don't really want. A lot of Muslim men, for example, I've noticed that. I can see it in their eyes. I know that they're not attracted to women. You can just tell, you know what I mean? And, And they're just so desperate. You know, they're constantly at the mosque. You know, they qalid, you know, they do the tabligh, you know, like they do all these old brother events and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, all right. Like I said, it's the gayest community in the world. And if you're to be a gay person, trust me, Islam is your religion. It's your religion. It's the place where you can best hide. No, seriously. Even, you know, at the masjid, you know, there's a masjid nearby me and they caught these two brothers. And this was like, the tabligh, like it's the most religious Salafi mosque. They call they say people are regularly caught having sex around it, you know?
Tabligh is not Salafi, the more towards the Sufi.
You know, honest to God, like, it's really hard to keep track of every jihadi little, you know what I mean? Thing. I'm African, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm African, I'm not an Arab. So I don't care about Arabic terms, okay?
Yeah.
It's not my religion. I don't care if I'm not right.
Okay.
Because there's going to be some dickhead in your comments like, oh, she doesn't even know what she's talking about. She wasn't even a Muslim, you know what I mean? No, I'm not a Muslim right now. And I'm not going to relearn, okay? Alif Bat Ta, okay? That's all I know. anyways. Yeah, so in conclusion, this is my talk. In concluding my talk today, don't DM me. First things first, definitely don't DM me. Second thing is don't DM individual other Muslims, ex-Muslims. Let me widen that point. Not only just don't DM me, don't DM me and don't DM individual ex-Muslims under the guise of help me. Because really, help yourself first and foremost, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you can't help yourself, good news. There's ex-Muslim organizations, you know what I mean? I know for a fact that ex-MNA, because I spoke to Mohammed Saeed, the head of ex-MNA, they're getting US funding now. And now that Biden's in, help us. What was I going to say? There'll probably be a bit more funding, you know. Actually, I don't know. It's pretty touch and go there. I don't know. But anyways, what I know for a fact is ex-MNA does receive some type of US government funding. Now, in the UK, for the UK people, message the Council of Ex-Muslims, there are people out there, you know what I mean? They even have, because you know in the UK, I swear London is like, there's no white people in London. It's just all ethnic, you know? Mm-hmm. So you will find somebody from your community, whether you're Afghani, Pakistani, Gypsy, whatever, they've got you covered. So the Council of Ex-Muslims and Mariam Nawazi, and she's got a whole posse of them. And they can point you in the right direction. Again, don't DM the individual ex-Muslim, but if you DM the organizations in Canada, who can they contact?
EXMNA as well.
Oh, yeah, EXMNA.
Yeah, North America.
In Australia, who can you contact? Nobody. No, really. It's not a joke. There's nobody to contact because we do have an organization. I know there's like Evan is probably screaming, right? Sorry. Hi, Evan, if you can see this. What I know for the ex-MNA in Australia is funds are very limited, you know what yeah. I mean? And there's just not that support yet. But what if you're in Australia or New Zealand, it's a lucky country. You know, we have no COVID. You know, I think you can find resources elsewhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like government resources. Like if you need homelessness services or mental health services, we've got really good healthcare as well too. So you can get mental health care through your GP. So you should be able to, in Australia and New Zealand, no, there is no help. But again, as I said, you don't really need much. Unfortunately for the Islamic world, shout out to anybody who's watching me for the Islamic world. My heart and soul and everything is with you. That's about all I can give you. So my last point was only come out when you're financially actualized. When you've actualized, now you don't need to like be in perfect mental health, but you do need to have a roof over your head, you know? You do need, because you can't live with me. You can't live with Abdullah Samia. You know, you can't live with Sarah Hayter. You can't live. Okay. So you need to have a roof over your head. Okay. Yeah. So only come out thinger. Again, as I said, avoid trauma bonding with other ex-Muslims. Seek help, seek therapy, do things in the healthy way. Mm. Also,
sounds good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The final point. Oh, yeah. No, final 2 points. Consent is an optional, guys. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say to any other boys from the Islamic world, it's not optional, you know.
No, it's not.
People have to consent and repeatedly, you know. So I'm going to leave you with that. And finally, my last point that's probably going to make me, it's going to cement the fact that I have no friends. I'm going to say this on the internet. Silence isn't violence.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody physically assaulting you is, okay? Mm-hmm. And that is wrong in every culture. Even Islam, right?
Yeah.
So defend yourself, but remember the first law of war, right? The best defense is a good offense, a good protection, good support system, you know, financial freedom, you know, all that good stuff. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, on that point. Silence awesome. Isn't violence. You know? Keep your mouth. If you like the biryani, and you've got a good situation, and there's no need. Here's the thing, like, people are like, they're going to be like, oh, you know, Noor, you know, she came out herself and she doesn't want other people to come out. No, here's my thing. There's enough content, ex-Muslim content out there. We have cracked nearly every decent good joke or made every decent critique about Islam. Now, mm-hmm. again, I'm not here to restrict that. I would argue we need more of that, and we need to do it in a creative manner. So we need, mm-hmm. I want to see songs, music. You know, I want to see film, you know, I want to see like different genres and different manners of critique. So I'm just going to put that out there. Go make a painting about Islam, make, you know, a song about it, make a movie, write a book. You know, we want to hear all that literature. But what I'm trying to say is do all these steps. So just say when they come for you, you know what I mean? Because it's not Ayan Hirsi type shit. I know Ayan Hirsi has security, but believe me, you're not getting no security. Believe me, you're not getting no security. Your ass is going to get killed. Your ass is going to get arrested like Zara. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, this. Thanks for coming on. And it was a good conversation. I do want to disagree a little bit on some of the things you said. Like the wall, like actually some of my best friends now are ex-Muslims. I have you know, I have a WhatsApp group with a bunch of them. Some of them are not, some of them are never moves in the group too, but like, I've like some of the best relationships I have now are with other ex-Muslims. And we, I don't know if we trauma bonded or not, but we talked about like similar experiences, leaving Islam, similar challenges we went through. Abdullah Gondal has become one of my best friends because of what we have in common, because of the shared experiences that we had and all that. So I don't know if you're describing something a little bit different
there. No, I was going to say, oh my God, I should really know. Thank you so much. Honest to God, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, actually, because I have some really great ex-Muslim friends. Shout out to you. Firstly, my best friend that I do Lap Nation with, Nabat. Hi, shout out to you. I call him, he's like my little gay husband, you know? Look, I have some really great, but they're healthy ex-Muslims. I just kind of discounted them. So sorry. Of course, you can make decent friendships. And you can make friendships with Muslims as well, too. Like, I have Muslim friends as well, too. I'm not against, be friends with everybody. You know, don't, you know, be friends with Christians, be friends with atheists, be friends with everybody. Make a Jewish friend. You know, I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, ex-Muslims, we're saving more Israeli lives than the IDF and the US Marines, you know? So, I'm be friends with all that. But what I'm trying to say is there can be toxic connections as well. You know what I mean?
And I'm
just acknowledging and making that, putting that out there into the ether, because there are some vulnerable, for example, there are some vulnerable ex-Muslims, you know what I mean? So, for example, I've seen this in groups that, for example, are not into drugs, never have done drugs, never have drank alcohol. They're fraternizing with people, hardcore drug takers. Now, for me, I don't know, maybe it's the parent in me kicking in as well, too. I'm like, whoa, you know, you guys should not be friends. You know, you're from Sweden, you're from wherever, just like, I don't know. I just feel like, yeah, we do have to be mindful that some people are damaged, you know what I mean, from the things that they've been through, and they're not going to take accountability for their behavior. So you need to take accountability for who you let into your life. That's all I'm trying to say. And I think coming from such a rigid and controlled culture, what happens to people when they let go of Islam, or even just leave the Islamic world, right? They can still think of themselves as Muslim. They just feel like all the reins have gone. They're like, "Woo, you know, let me just, you know." So that's where I'm kind of trying to mitigate some of that harm.
Okay.
You know, it's just harm minimization.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll leave it on that note there.
Sounds good.
I think I've said enough.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on and for sharing your thoughts and experiences. It was good. I mean, it's definitely different having just you on and being able to kind of, you know, explore some of these ideas. Maybe next time we'll try having a little bit more time. We'll schedule 2 hours so that we can have a little bit more in-depth conversation on some of the topics, because we didn't really have time to really go into some of these things, especially the more controversial ones. But yeah, thank you.
I also wanted to talk more about like other ex-Muslims. Shout out to all the ex-Muslims out there. Special shout out to Zahra. Special shout out to all my Waqis, all my Waq Nation people. I love you guys also. I just want to like I said, this was about harm minimization. This was not about any individual. I have nothing but the most, I've had a lot of really, I'm a pretty tough cookie. So I've had pretty positive experience in the community. So I just want to say that, you know.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been great. Thanks for the conversation. Thank you everyone for being here. And do consider joining the channel or subscribing. Click thumbs up if you like the show.
Of course.
And I have Noon's Instagram, but don't DM her, as she said. You're most welcome to DM.
No, I should say, no, hang on, because that makes me just seem like such a mean person, and I'm really not. Look, you can DM me for friendship, you know what I mean? And I'm not the most social person. But look, I'm just saying, like, I'm not a firefighter. You know what I mean? So what I'm trying to say, if your house is burning, guys, I'm probably not the person to call. But let me know how it goes though.
That's understandable. I mean, I just feel like, some of us that are out there a little bit more public, leaders of the ex-Muslim community, we get a lot more people asking us for help and what to do. And it can be overwhelming at times. And I totally understand that. And
it's not for me, it's not the mental stuff. It's just, I hate the feeling of not being able to help people. If I was a millionaire, gazillionaire, I'd be like, here you go, you know what I mean? But it's just, I'm my hands at this. I hate the feeling of finding out a horrible situation and a tragedy and you just can't help that person, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I'm just making sure that everybody understands that I really don't have the resources like that. But, you know, if you want to tell me how you're winning, I mean, I'm here to cheer you on. You know, and I love those stories. I love triumphant stories. So please send them in. Please DM me if that's the case. Anyways, I'm going to leave you there.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, guys.
Thanks, bye-bye. Everyone. Don't disconnect just yet. Okay. Noon and everyone else. Thank you. Bye for now. Bye-bye.